Now, the man behind the voice you've been hearing for decades associated with Valley sports teams. It's time for That's So Money with Arizona Diamondbacks and ASU broadcaster Jeff Munn. Money, money, money,
money, money. Hi there. It's time once again for me to offer you a That's So Money podcast, as the Open just told you. And welcome to it here at sports360az.com. I'm Jeff Munn. And it's been a while since you and I chatted. I've been doing a little bit of traveling to Seattle, to Toledo, Ohio, with ASU women's basketball. And I wanted to share some thoughts about some things I experienced, particularly in Toledo. First of all, it was freezing. It never got out of the 30s the whole time we were there. ASU beat Vanderbilt, lost to Notre Dame. But it was they played Vanderbilt in a noon game on a Sunday. I'm sorry, on a Saturday. Noon Eastern time. In fact, I correct myself. That was an 11 a.m. tip-off in Toledo, which was 8 a.m. here in Arizona. The interesting thing for me was, okay, the ASU wins the game. Now we don't play again until Monday night. So in and amongst the press conferences on Sunday and just the prep work that you have to do as a broadcaster, get ready for a game, there's a little bit of downtime. So I spent a little bit of time when I wasn't eating chili dogs at Tony Paco's over at a hockey game. Toledo has an East Coast Hockey League team, the Toledo Walleye, and they play in a building called the Huntington Center. Seats about 6,000, maybe 7,000 at the outside. And they had a pair of games Saturday and Sunday against the Gwinnett Gladiators. Gwinnett is a suburb of Atlanta. Let me tell you, first of all, the game I went to Saturday night. Walked up, ticket was $15 to sit in the lower level. That was pretty appealing. But the other thing that struck me was the amount of people that were at the game. It drew 4,000 or 5,000 in a 7,000 seat building. The other thing that struck me, and it was really the thing I wanted to talk about today, was just the feeling I got being around the people that were attending that game. Toledo, let me give you a little background. Toledo, Ohio is a city, I think the population right now is at 250,000. Back in the 70s, it was touching near 500,000. But gradually, with the erosion of the economy and the move of industries, it's right in the middle of the Rust Belt. The population has gradually decreased decade to decade. It's in the northeast corner of the state of Ohio, about 40 miles south of Detroit. And the main industry there, I guess, now is they make glass for car windows and for other things. But the University of Toledo football team plays in a stadium called the Glass Bowl. So that's the main industry in Toledo. It's a city that, like every other city in America, has had to go through some hard economic times in the last 5 years. But I was struck by the people, and I walked the concourse during one of the intermissions, and you saw tons of people wearing Walleye gear, hats, shirts. They were very in tune with what that team was doing, even though it was a farm team. And if you have a player, you know the story. If a player plays really well, he could be gone tomorrow to their parent club. And one of their parent clubs is the Detroit Red Wings. But that didn't matter to the people in Toledo. They just loved being at the hockey game and rooting for their team. And it's the same thing, I guess you could say, and I experienced this with the Toledo Mud Hens, who are a very famous minor league team playing in the International League. Their ballpark right next door to the Huntington Center. In fact, I think the same group that owns the Walleye owns the Mud Hens. And even a week, 10 days before their opener, there was bunting along the railings of the ballpark, a very nice minor league ballpark. And the businesses around the area all had signs proclaiming welcome opening day. And I talked to somebody who works at Tony Paco's. If you watch the show MASH, the character Max Klinger loves Tony Paco's. He's from Toledo, and it is a great place to get a chili dog or two, or in my case, maybe more. But I talked to one of the bartenders at Tony Paco's, and she was telling me just about the civic pride in the teams in Toledo. We're very fortunate here in Phoenix. We have four major league sports. We have a top flight PGA Tour stop, LPGA Tour stop, two NASCAR races. We have a number of national events, a major bowl game, Super Bowl, college football players. We got a lot of things going on sports-wise in this market. And I would never suggest that Phoenix sports fans are spoiled or jaded. But I think it's good every once in a while to go and get in that environment with people in a town where they know there's not a major league team. Nobody's talking about the NBA expanding to Toledo or the NFL playing an exhibition game in Toledo or Major League Baseball, et cetera, et cetera. Come on, that's even silly to bring that up. It's a city of 250,000. They couldn't support it. But they do support minor league sports. They do support the University of Toledo. And it's great to see the attitude and the atmosphere. And I think it's refreshing sometimes for those of us who do get a little bit jaded by the negativity that is associated sometimes with big-time sports. The money, the occasional brush with substances that shouldn't be used. It's great to get back into an environment where it's a little bit more simple and down-to-earth. And that was one of the things I'll take away from my trip to Toledo, that and a Mud Hens t-shirt and a Mud Hens hat, was just being around people that just enjoy sports for pure sport. They get it. It's a small town, smaller than Phoenix anyway, and they understand that their franchises are minor league franchises, and they exist to supplant the parent club with players. And so you might be rooting for a player today, and they might be going tomorrow, but it doesn't matter to them. They love it anyway, and they love going out and supporting their teams. The other thing about that hockey game that night, the Walleye, I guess, had been on an 11-game losing streak going into that game on Saturday night that they won over Gwinnett. And yet they still drew close to 5,000 people, which for a minor league team, when you know, that's pretty good, especially in a 7,000-seat building. And it's not the top level, the East Coast Hockey League, which used to have a team here in Phoenix, is kind of the double A of minor league hockey. So to draw a crowd like that, that's pretty good stuff. And it was very refreshing to get in amongst the people of that city to see how they approach sports. They also turned out in very good numbers for the NCAA tournament games without a team from the area, unless you count Notre Dame, who's, you know, South Bend's about 200 miles from Toledo. But they didn't have a local team in the draw, and yet we saw a lot of people in Toledo women's basketball T-shirts, Toledo athletics T-shirts. They were great supporters, great hosts. If they could have done something about the weather, that would have been terrific. I was mentioning this on Brad's show on Friday. I drove from Toledo to Detroit to go home on Tuesday, and it snowed the whole time. I mean, down here, it's mid-80s. I was driving through a snowstorm. Not a snowstorm, it was just a steady dusting of snow in 25 degrees all the way up to Detroit. And I've rarely had this happen on flights. During basketball season, we'll go to a lot of places that are cold, and then you fly home, and the pilot announces, here's what the weather's like in Phoenix. And most of the time, you don't get much of a reaction. But because it had been so cold, and it's been such a harsh winter in the Midwest, when we got on the plane and the pilot announced, the high temperature at the airport today in Phoenix is 86. There was a very loud, audible ooh that came from all the people on the flight, and you could understand why. It has been a very, very tough winter. All right, other things. The D-backs are back from Australia. As we tape this podcast today, David Hernandez has just been diagnosed with a torn UCL and is probably facing Tommy John surgery. But let's talk about the Australia experience. I spent time last weekend. I did not go on the trip because I was going with ASU to the NCAA tournament. But I spent a lot of time before I left town on Thursday doing two things, reading as many stories as I could out of the Sydney newspapers and listening to an all-news radio station in Sydney. About 11 o'clock in the morning here would be 5 a.m. the next morning in Sydney, so I would catch the beginning of the morning show on this all-news station. And gradually, as they moved from Monday to Tuesday, Tuesday to Wednesday, the chatter about those games started to intensify. The media coverage in Sydney, and I'm talking about the writers with the Sydney newspapers, was phenomenal. They were very fair. They had great knowledge of the game, understood what was going on, and seemed to really enjoy having these events to cover. Obviously, the D-backs did a terrific job, not only in promoting their own brand, which is one of the things you want to do when you get into that situation, but also just promoting Major League Baseball. I was struck by the Dodgers' seemingly perpetual efforts to do damage control over things that were being said by their players. Andre Ethier is a guy I know and I like a great deal, not just because he's a Sun Devil, but just he's a good guy. But Andre is a bit intense about things, and when he got off the plane in Sydney, somebody asked him about how he felt about being there, and he said, I got on a plane, this is where it landed, and we're playing games, which was not quite the response that the people in Sydney were looking for. It just tells you a little bit of the difference in attitude on the part of the two organizations, maybe the two teams. The Dodgers did try very hard to cover up the mistakes of some of the comments that were made by some of their players and say we're very happy to be here. But the fact remains that the Diamondbacks, and again, keeping in mind that yours truly is a Diamondbacks employee, but I have to say this for the record. They did a much better job at just promoting the brand and promoting themselves and promoting Sydney. The D-backs traveling party loved every aspect of that trip. The time change didn't bother them. They were jet-lagged when they got back, but not one person that was on that trip would have traded that experience for anything in the world. And you didn't get that comment from a lot of people with the Dodgers. And that's not to knock the Dodgers. It just reminds you that there are two ways to approach these things. A talk show host here in town, and it's not somebody who's really well-known. He works on the weekends, but I happened to hear his show last weekend, was incredulous in his criticism of the D-backs and Major League Baseball in particular for scheduling these games. Okay, well, let's answer that question. Why do this? Well, we've reached the point where the U.S. market has been, I don't want to say they've tapped it out, but in order for this game to grow, two things have to happen. You have to appeal to fans outside the United States to watch the games, and you have to appeal to fans outside the United States to play the game. One of the things, and Derek Hall was very upfront about this, he wanted to utilize these games to promote baseball in Australia, not just because it would sell jerseys for the D-backs, but also because there aren't as many options for young high school baseball players in Australia to further their amateur careers in Australia as there are in the United States. There are more opportunities, scholarships for a baseball player to get a paid-for college education in the United States. But a lot of people in Australia aren't really that aware of it, and the hope was that by going over and playing these games, it would get a discussion going about the options that are available to amateur baseball players in Australia to come to the United States to not only get a college education, but to further their development as baseball players. That's one of the reasons you do that. The same host also said, why in the world did they make them go the third week of March? Why couldn't they do this in the middle of the season? Well, that's kind of a no-brainer, but we'll go ahead and answer it anyway. If you think that what went on with going there the third week of March was disruptive, try doing it in May. It would not only disrupt the D-backs and whoever they played, or in this case the Dodgers, but it would disrupt the entire Major League Baseball schedule. Look, I'll be the first to admit, it's been bizarre and it's been unusual to play two games that count and come back and play another week of games that don't. That's not something teams are going to do every year. It might be a couple more years before Major League Baseball stages games outside the U.S. again. And when they do it again, the thought is that they'll probably go to Europe. So it'll probably be a couple of East Coast teams that do it this time. But the simple truth of the matter is that there is no ideal time to play these games, but the least intrusive time is to do it in the third week of March. And that, too, is where the D-backs deserve a lot of credit. Players didn't complain about the disruption to their routine. They actually looked at it as kind of a benefit that it broke up the monotony of spring training. The games themselves were a bit concerning from the standpoint that the D-backs did not swing the bats very well. But as I said on Brad's show, you got to tip your cap at some point to the two guys on the mound in Kershaw and Ryu. They might have had a little something to do with that. And in the very first Cactus League game, when the club got back, they scored 14 runs and had 20 base hits against the Chicago Cubs. The wind was blowing out that day. That might have had some to do with it, but both teams were playing in the conditions, and the Cubs weren't nearly as successful at the plate as the D-backs were. The bottom line is this. I think if you made a checklist of everything that the Diamondbacks and Major League Baseball wanted to accomplish from a marketing and a brand promotion standpoint, you could pretty much check off every box. So it was a good experience. It was a great experience in terms of the games. Clearly it wasn't. But in terms of furthering the game, promoting the game in places where it hadn't been, it was an absolute success. I can't speak for the way the Dodgers approached it, but certainly from the D-backs' point of view, it was something that they will cherish for a long time, and I think they'll reap the benefits of it for a long time to come, not just in their own bottom line, but for the promotion of the game of baseball. Keep in mind, the NBA plays regular season games outside the U.S. The NFL is continually tinkering with the idea of putting a team in London. Mexico's been mentioned as a site, and they've played regular season games both in London and Mexico City. The NHL has played games before in Europe. This is an age and an era where these four major pro sports leagues understand that for them to continue to grow and keep up with the other leagues, they have to look outside their own boundaries in their own country. So you can lament the D-backs and the impact it had to go over to Australia, but you can't deny the fact that these things have to continue to be explored for these leagues to grow. Okay, well, we're probably going to come back in a couple of weeks with another podcast. Who knows what will be going on between now and then, but there'll be a lot to talk about, as there always is. I do hope you'll go to some of the other areas on this website, sports360az.com. You get great coverage. We've got people covering the U of A run in the NCAA tournament, and they're not just doing it sitting at a computer here. They're at the games. Jared Cohen went with ASU to Texas. Eric Sorensen's in Anaheim with the U of A. And you get up-close and personal coverage of these events from people who are on site. That's what you get at this website. You also get updated information on the teams that matter most to you. So I hope you'll check that out as well. And come back and check on us in a couple of weeks when we have another podcast. Thanks for tuning in for this edition of That's So Money, and I'll talk to you soon. Money.